Blog Talk Radio.
A man should decide what he wants to do with his life.
But every time you ask them what was the greatest challenge, they would always say the black male.
The question stands as to what we are willing to do and to build new institutions that will speak to our needs.
I just do the work. I look at it like a lot of people I know who look at it for their 15 minutes of fame, and this is my life's walk. When I leave here, people will say, that he ain't never stopped this. No, I never will stop it.
For more than two decades, Rory T. Edwards has established himself as an internationally recognized leader and innovator in the world of education, athletic wellness, and lifestyle management transformation. He has partnered with educational institutions, business professionals, and community leaders to introduce and implement proven strategies and action plans that promote the intellectual and social advancement of all people.
Everybody's told me about the hundreds of thousands of individuals who are doing this work, and I applaud all the people who are doing this work. But the thing is that you can't do this work just in your basement.
This is the Rory T. Edwards Show with Sheila Robinson.
I was just reflecting back on our very first discussion about the format of the show, and there's one thing that just sticks out in my mind. You said people always want to talk about
problems. Because every time somebody calls, they want to discuss the problem. And we're not talking about just the problems. So what we said we were going to do, we were going to concentrate on
the
solutions. So if you want to get the solution, you better tune into the Rory T. Edwards Show with the wonderful Sheila Robinson.
Some people can inspire changes in others by simply the power of their words. Rory T. Edwards is one of those people who can best be described as inspirational. Rory has made it his purpose in life to help others.
Being the age that I am, I still to this day can connect with the younger people.
And now listen and join in and be a part of today's conversation. The show will elevate your attitude to increase your altitude through the process of communication, wisdom, vision, experience, structure, and action, which will empower you to take responsibility for the outcome of your most precious possession, you.
I guess.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. What's going on? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Oh, are you still on the boat or something? How about you?
I'm on the boat. You know, this is what I do on Sundays. I'm here with my people. People, y'all want to say hey? Say hey. Can you hear them? See what I'm saying?
Hey.
Sunday, Friday, they said hey. They're on the boat. We doing what we do. But we have a very serious show going on today. Can you hear me, though?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. All right, we trying to make it happen. I don't know, Robin telling me I'm doing something wrong. What Robin telling me?
You got two lines going on?
I don't know. I mean, we got Professor Turner going to come on and drop some great knowledge. But today, what we doing, we going to make it happen. I mean, great shows, great things going on. How's things in Colorado for you, though?
Oh, it's great. Kind of rainy today, but, you know, we can use some rain. But other than that, it was a great day.
Okay. I mean, it's wonderful out here in Atlanta. The weather's 90 degrees. We out here with some wonderful young people. We doing the thing on the boat.
I saw it for my destiny.
XO_Chelsea.
Everybody's dropping their XOs and their what's that? Your Twitter handles?
That was Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, they trying to drop their Twitter and Instagram.
And Snapchat.
Everybody's taking advantage of what Rory T. Edwards is doing. You see what I mean? But it's a great opportunity. Great day. My man, we had Ramon on before. Ramon Tykes, remember the day trader?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, this is Ramon doing his thing, and we out here just celebrating a little wonderful day out here on the lake. But, we're going to make sure that everything.
Tell Ramon I said hey.
Hey, Ramon. My co-host said hey, Sheila.
Sheila, hey.
What's up?
She told me, what's up?
Hey, you know. You got us lost.
Yeah, Ramon tried to put this on me that we got us lost about 10 minutes on the lake. You know, that water looks all the same when you're out here on the lake trying to drive and you don't understand where you're going, right? This is one of them great days. This is one of them great days. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, had a wonderful time out here. But we going, definitely have, we have a serious show. Like I said, talk to us about what's going on in Colorado, and then we can move into a quick break, and then we can come back with
Dr. Turner.
That's right.
Well, again, we just want to remind everyone, if you have any teenagers between the ages of 13 and 17 that have a talent and interested in entering the Strive Fashion and Talent to Teen Pageant, we will actually work with them on their talent, and we'll help them with their walk and their presentation. So please reach out to Strive Teens on Facebook or email us at striveusa@aol.com. And at this time, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
That sounds great.
Hi, this is Minister Paul and Linda Martin from the Stand in the Gap Cancer Awareness Initiative. My wife and I are humbled and honored cancer survivors. Given another opportunity to live, we decided that just living isn't good enough. We want to give back, so we created Stand in the Gap to help cancer patients and caregivers while they go through treatment and financial struggles. Won't you help us in this mission? Go to gppfound.com. That's gppfound.com. See what we're doing. Together, we can make a difference. Thank you.
WXRP Radio is looking to partner with your business. Could your business use more branding and exposure? Could your business use more customers? Well, WXRP Radio is here to help. Advertise with WXRP Radio and give your company the advertising boost that it needs. With packages as low as $30, WXRP Radio is the way to go. Let us get your company information out to our listeners. For more information, call 678-744-WXRP or email us at sales@WXRPradio.com. That's sales@WXRPradio.com. Let WXRP Radio help you grow your business. WXRP Radio, the station that listens.
All right, Sheila, you hear that? We're drowning in deep waters.
Actually, it was pretty funny. When the chorus came on, I said, yeah, if he's driving that boat, they are pretty darn close.
I didn't pick that song. The way I picked that song is so funny because I was thinking about the concept of what Dr. Turner's going to talk about tonight. But then I look
right.
at where I am on that water, and out of breath trying to run up to get into the car. I'm
in
deep water.
I thought that was a Robin move. I said Robin is on her tip again today.
No, Robin. Robin, she's good. I took that song earlier. It is so funny. But listen, let's get to the business so I don't have to talk so much. Let's welcome in. I have to call him Dr. Gary Turner because this is one of the first people I met when I came to Atlanta. And just the information that he has and just the knowledge that he has is one that needs to be shared globally because I just think, you know, there's very few people that I look up to and consult with about decisions that I make, but he's one of those individuals. So hopefully he's in the studio.
I'm here, brother.
There we go. There we go, Sheila. This is the man right here. When I tell you this is the man right here, he's here. He's here. Sir.
Good evening to everybody. Hi, Sheila. How are you doing? My pleasure meeting you by way of introduction on the phone.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And Rory has elevated me to some status that I'm not worthy of, but I thank you, my brother.
Oh, please. I didn't even elevate you to the first floor. You're on the 10th floor. So... Sheila, the great thing about it that Gary's going to share with us some information that is actually in reference to where he believes we are right now. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to talk about where we are, you know, as a people. We have a lot of work to do. And I know when we talked about it, Gary had a few inspirational pieces that he put together that he wanted to share. And so,
yeah, I wanted those pieces actually to be a backdrop to the conversation, Rory and Sheila, as we have discussed, Rory. And so how candid, can we be open and candid during this conversation? Or how restricted am I?
No, there's no restrictions. This is wide open. This is.
bring it live.
This is wide open. This is wide open.
All right, so I'm not sure until where we will go or where you want me to go, brother.
I want you to go wherever you want to go. Let me begin by saying, first of all,
thank you. For an opportunity to be in a serious dialogue with you. Rory is one of my favorite people. Certainly, as he indicated, we met many, many years ago, and we've had very intense and very honest conversation, sometimes that black men don't get to, especially when we talk about this issue of community development and talk about the issue in terms of how we move forward collectively as a people, but more importantly as human beings on this planet. And so... those are the perspectives that I bring to this table. So let me begin by sharing a quote from Malcolm so we should not forget as we begin this dialogue, because sometimes people think that we will condemn them because of something that they've either done or have not done, and that's not the case. And so I share this with you out of love and respect. Malcolm said, "Don't be in a hurry to condemn a person because he doesn't do what you do or think as you do or as fast. There was a time when you didn't know what you know today." So we begin the conversation there. Is that okay?
That's a great place to start. That opens up all right. Minds and ears.
All right. So let me begin. As I indicated to Roy, I wanted to use some of my writings, a few of them, a couple of them at least, two or three, if not another one or so, that I pulled together, especially given the fact of some of the recent traumas that have been plaguing this country and specifically the black community with the recent deaths of many black men starting several years ago across the country, and even before, but certainly the most recent ones that have been televised for us and brought to our attention. So the first piece I want to share with you, certainly we use the poem, the word poem, some use spoken word, but it's a collection of my thoughts. And so let me share some of the words that I put together, and hopefully will resonate with you, and we can begin our conversation by way of any questions or insight or perspective that you have on this piece. This piece is called The Reintroduction to Jim Crow. Once again, the title is The Reintroduction to Jim Crow. I thought he was dead and buried, a grave so deep that resurrection would not be possible. Shocked and surprised and astonished to see him once again. How could we allow this to occur? Where had our diligence and vigilance and monitoring of his ability failed? A people who sat down in defiance, stood up proclaiming, rose up in love and solidarity. Ordinary people that finally became aware of their collective selves as agents of social change after so long. People that did not see the disguise, nor were we informed by our allies. Guess they were also blinded. Should have known that he would not disappear so easily, nor give up the estate so readily. How could we allow this to occur? An underestimation of his ability to transform, to be better than he was before. We were warned to be careful in observing what new skin this old monster would come in next. We heard but didn't listen. Our antennas were not in tune. We got comfortable. Tumbling of the walls of optic segregation was successful. Dismantling the deep vestiges of systemic segregation went untouched. If only we could get in the door and prove ourselves, demonstrate our worth. We were always worthy. Halted before the work was completed. Clearly articulated expectations and total responsibility did not occur. Thinking that those not engaged in the defiance, proclaiming and solidarity would acknowledge what was done, their benefit from it, and elevate others with them. A restricted analysis that forbade collective movement and accountability gave rise to individualism. How could we allow this to occur? He was always there, observing, analyzing, reformatting, restructuring, quietly reinforcing his influence and control. Same old tools: deceit, slander, undermining, bribes, payoffs, wrapped in new packaging. Co-optation was deepened. A new enlistee was at the table, more educated, smarter, not baptized by community, nor raised by community. Conditions under which they developed not as demeaning. Most noticeable forms of optic segregation long ago removed. They mimic, replicate, and become mirror images of those that they should have been challenging. He digs deeper, uses their drive, ambition to create and forge alliances for his benefit. His new standard, proper fit. They adjust and become actively maladjusted. How could we allow this to occur? We did not kill him. He played possum. We now wonder, will there be another chance? How could we allow this to occur?
Now, is that one of your original pieces?
That is mine.
Wow. Very. I know that you had referred to Minister Muhammad in the beginning, so I didn't know if it was something that he had written, but that's very deep.
No, that's a piece, and I think it resonates for me now. I wrote it a little while ago. It resonates for me, given that, once again, the fact that we all of a sudden seem to be shocked regarding the killings of young black males, and the all of a sudden it's been highlighted in terms of the mass incarceration and the homicides among black males in a number of fashions. And we seem to be surprised that all of a sudden Jim Crow never went away. We never killed him. We never went through the process of changing the society. And so I use in terms words like mimic, to mimic one, to replicate somebody else, to become maladjusted. And I think that's what we've become. And so we gave birth to a new generation of people who have not clearly been baptized, as I put in the piece, by community. They don't understand what's going on. We haven't conditioned them to clearly understand, and not conditioned them to clearly understand what their responsibilities are. But let me also say, while saying that, that it is also that we must also realize that it's not just this new generation, those who are in their 20s and 30s and 40s and some early 50s. It's the generation that, and I'm 60 now and moving older, getting older, it's my generation who also, those who were not baptized in community and went on along their way and decided that they were going to make a way in this society, and making that way meant that they had to give up something of who they were and who they are. And if that's not too confusing for people to understand. And so it's not surprising that Jim Crow, the system of Jim Crow, because we know racism is there, but somewhere along the line, we thought that the system of Jim Crow had gone away, and we're seeing now that it is still alive and well and flourishing.
Yeah, what's more alarming is that the way that it's bringing it, for me anyway, this is my personal assessment, is that the way this has to be brought to light, I actually work in technology. So,
okay.
So I don't think anything has changed. I think it's always been going on. And what really bothers me about, you know, as you say, these things that seem to be coming to light, is what about the things that didn't come to light before we, you know, sentenced someone to life in prison for doing something they weren't supposed to be, that they really didn't do? What happens when there was no DNA test? What happens? So these things that appear to be coming to light right now, you know, there are so many that have sacrificed because we decided to shut our eyes or turn to conform and to, you know, turn our heads the other way and not really think that it was important. But now that we have a video camera on it, it's like we can make these things more believable to the average person, and it's sad to me, you know, that we have lost so many lives, and no one's going to be able to go back and recount them.
Well, you know, even when we talk about the average person, Sheila, we expand that definition, so to speak, and so we talk it from the standpoint, and I think sometimes we get fearful now talking about the issue. Sometimes we're comfortable talking about the issue of class, so to speak, but not necessarily race, and those who know me know that I talk honestly about both. And so when we talk about the issue in terms of the exposure now to the broader society, that means the white society, the black society, the brown society, even within the black community, we didn't necessarily, many of us, have turned our eyes away from the reality of what's been going on in the community for a long period of time. We don't know what to do with, we don't necessarily know how to deal with that, I think, or to some extent maybe it's been embarrassing for people more so.
I would, and I'm going to call you Dr. Turner too. But
no, Gary is fine, please.
Okay, so Gary, for me, I grew up in the project, and I tell this story quite often. But I went to I was the only African American in my graduating class. So, you know, but in the community, I was heavily involved with the NAACP. I helped with the Atlanta Murdered and Missing Kids. I went out. I was on the ground trying to find them, and still to this day, no, Wayne Williams did not kill all those kids. But there were people, and I'm over 50, so there were people in my day that were taking some of us by the hand and saying, you know, this is reality. And, you know, truth be told, some of those people that were taking me out there were Republicans, and I never knew they were Republicans because they were so heavy in the community to me as Democrats, and I never thought, you know, I guess I never even really cared about that other than when they were showing me examples of people my age, you know, being killed or not allowed to go to school and stressing how important it was for me to go to college and, you know, things I was not getting in the environment that I was being raised in. I know everybody didn't have that kind of exposure as an African-American teenager, black teenager, whatever you want to call me. But I know that some of us did. And so when I look at it now and I look at all those walks and marches and all the different things that I did with those older adults, I don't see those same community leaders that think it's that important to make sure these kids understand our history.
Well, I'm not sure if they ever even appreciated the history. Once again, it becomes a situation in terms of we look at a separation in terms of by class standard. And so most of us are motivated towards what? When you mention college, what does college really do for us? College prepares us to be technical servants within this society. It doesn't necessarily prepare us to be thinkers. It doesn't prepare us necessarily to be challengers. I am reminded of a statement that was written by somebody a while ago, and I don't know her name, and it happens to be a statement that was written by a woman, and I have great respect for women, and she happens to be a white female. And her statement was, let me share it with you, and you think about this. Whites are taught, she wrote, whites are taught to think of their lives as morally neutral, normative and average, and also ideal, so that when we whites work to benefit others, this is seen as work which will allow them, listen to this, which will allow them to be more like us. And so, you know, the Dr. King, before Dr. King died, he was talked about words like a transformation of this society, that we had to transform society. And so I'm always reminded, Sheila, of the fact that it's like the old analogy or somebody used a long time ago. If you bake a cake and leave one of the main ingredients out, and then all of a sudden and that main ingredient happens to be, say, cinnamon, you leave cinnamon out and then you add cinnamon to the top of the cake, it's not a cinnamon-based cake. It's a cake. Something's been added on. And so all the things that when we look at this society, with all due respect for this society, and I think I certainly have respect for the society as it stands, but it certainly needs to change. We have been added on to the society, and we've never been fully incorporated into the society. And that incorporation would demand a level of change and a level of respect, and we've not gotten there yet. And so the question, I know a part of the introduction to your program, and I don't know if Rory is still with us, part of the introduction to your program, part of the introduction to your program talks about the issues of solutions. And so I am not sure at this stage of development in this society that we can get to the type of solutions that we actually need, because they will demand, once again, a transformation of society. And so I'm not sure if we are willing to make the sacrifice to transform society. That is a challenge for us. You know, we use words like, as an example, like diversity. Well, you know, when you use a word like diversity, you know, what does the word really mean? Well, one of the things that it does is it challenges and forces us to think differently about things that are habitual and normal and comfortable, so that we can step outside of that. But how do we really embrace that level of diversity? How do we engage it? How do we incorporate it into our lives? That is indeed the challenge that this society is faced with, and we have not figured it out yet. I'm not sure we will certainly figure it out on this phone today. I think those who were moving in a direction to force us to think about it collectively have transitioned to whatever that never other phase of universal existence is. They're no longer with us. But those of us who are still here still have that responsibility, and we simply have not lived up to it.
Since Dr. Turner, you asked, was I here? I am. So the one thing that I want to do is I listened to a presentation yesterday by a gentleman. It was a YouTube that was sent to me, and I have to send you his name, Dr. Somebody, who talked about where we have come as black people since the Emancipation Proclamation. And he stated in his presentation is that when we're giving that Emancipation Proclamation, we occupied 1% of, no, 0.5% of 1% of the wealth of America. And he said today we occupy the same percentage. so in reality, we really didn't come anywhere from where we were giving that opportunity to be free in this country. The other profound thing that he stated was that the civil rights movement and the all of the civil rights movements and the segregation movement really didn't advance us as black people. And I've been debating that subject for a long time, because what we did is we sort of eliminated the black community from being proactive in advancing the black agenda. And I mean, you know, you and I have had several conversations about that. And I mean, all the people that you have been engaged with who were, I would say, the groundbreakers on advocating this information and sharing this information have been sort of diminished in their message, because what people say is that they were angry black people. And so what we do is we put that title on them. And so many people who believe or want to believe their information, they sort of go away from them because they don't want to be identified as associating with those individuals. And so, I mean, it was interesting to hear his information. And I'm going to send you his video.
Yeah,
so you can just
do.
Hear it. And so we can just, you know, dialogue about this later. But I was just so taken back. And I mean, it's information that I've actually shared with people, because I don't think that in most cases we look at where we have advanced. You know, we look at the people with jobs, and we look at people, Oprah's, and we look at Jordan, and we look at all these people who are billionaires, but we look at the overall amount that the economy is making, and where do we really fit into that economy?
Well, yeah, Rory, let me share. I mean, absolutely. I certainly agree with you. We clearly understand where we fit in. We fit in at the bottom of the economic scale in society. Certainly, we own a lot, and we don't necessarily own anything. Certainly, those double standards exist. But let me share another piece with you, because I show you I would do that today, and especially for the listeners. So another piece that I wrote, and this is my writing, of course, is called "Lenses Defined Without Standards." And so you and I have had these conversations over the years in terms of, you know, people's perception of things. Patrick Moynihan once said, and I'm reminded, that everybody's entitled to their opinion, but that not their own set of facts. And so this piece was written somewhat based upon my understanding of how we look at circumstances surrounding society and our own personal lives, and it becomes a part of our perspective, but not necessarily grounded in fact. And so, you know, sometimes when we look at that particular piece, we realize that somebody's reality is not necessarily one that is based upon the circumstances or the truth about those circumstances that exist, but it is in terms of their reality and their perspective. But let me share with you and see if it makes sense to you. It's called "Lenses Defined Without Standards." We, or at least most of us, look at the world through lenses that are defined without standards, because the prescription was written by our experiences, and thus the conclusion and resulting pronouncements are colored and masked, clothed, shaded, toned, and highlighted according to the truth. No way. According to a lie? Surely not. According to the reality of experiences? Absolutely. Forged, crafted, molded into consequences that defy universal logic, are absent universal soundness, and remiss of intellectual universal correctness to those looking in, because the prescription was written by our experiences. The time, the place, the circumstances, the condition, the environment, reflective of consideration? No way. Reflective of understanding? Surely not. Reflective of the reality of experiences? Absolutely. Decided, directed, conducted, derived from factors that are most unusual, seriously undermining and at least unclear to those looking in. A conclusion that is not conclusive, never, because the prescription was written by our experiences. And so, Rory, we don't necessarily, our experiences, they are so diverse in and of themselves, they are so varied in and of themselves, we don't necessarily operate from the standpoint of truth and fact at times. We operate from another set of circumstances and conditions, which causes us at times to be in conflict with each other. And so, yeah, you and I have had those conversations in terms of how do we struggle to get to the truth. Well, those of us who struggle to get to the truth realize that the truth is indeed what? Buried. It is layered with a lot of dirt, so to speak, to make it plain and simple on top of it. And so we have to dig deeper and deeper and deeper in order to get to the truth. And that's a struggle for us where we stand right now.
I mean, that's incredible information. Sheila, what's going to have to happen is my phone's about to die.
Uh-oh.
So I'm gonna try to change lines, hopefully. And I just need, Gary, I know there's another piece that you wanted to share. So I think that we could definitely share that piece, because I think the conversation that you and I had was, as we talked about it, was really funny about how it was about a person that you met.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me share that one, but I want to share another one before I even get to that reward, because a part of this conversation is for us to always remember as we critique what we're doing. We should always honor those individuals who have laid the groundwork for you and I and Sheila to at least be able to have some level of dialogue on this particular subject, as limited as it might be. And so a part of that, if your phone is going to die, hopefully you'll be able to hear it. This piece is called Paladins. And for those who don't know, Paladin is a word that, well, I pulled it out a long time ago. I love Westerns. And so there was a man called Richard Boone who lived at one time. I'm sure he's deceased now. He was a Western character or actor. And he played the role of on a show called Have Gun Will Travel. And he was called Paladin. So the word Paladin means a protector. And so this is written for those brothers and sisters and freedom fighters independent of race who come out of various communities who set the stage for us to be here. Let me share it with you. Paladins, proclaiming their right of ownership to the community they abode, like young warriors arising from beyond the ridge, defying a system that had for generations relegated the community inhabitants to a status of demonic unworthiness, challenging institutions that have countless times seized the right to be right without the moral right to be irresponsible, proclaiming their right of ownership to the community they abode, like young protectors, equipped with ancestral knowledge and the pain of neglect, daring not to mask their love for themselves and their people over country, understanding that the two were principally intertwined, standing firm on the belief that responsibility dictated a response, but consciousness dictated struggle, proclaiming their right of ownership to the community they abode. Like young constructionists, they stood steadfast in defense of principle over compromise. Service became their calling card, community building along with program development their banner theme, their marquee, proclaiming their right of ownership to the community they abode, calling out to their fellow inhabitants to wake up and rebut, preaching love of self, demanding respect for others, responding only to the perpetrators of violence with civility, outnumbered, outgunned, their engagement no less relentless, their declarations no less lawful, proclaiming their right as paladins to the community they abode. And so that is a tribute to those who came through generations and generations and years of struggle all the way back since the time of the imposition of the enslavement of African people in this country and around the world for those individuals who have fought. So it's a tribute to those individuals that we refer to as paladins, the true protectors of the community. Sheila, you still there with me?
Well,
oh, I'm
no
here.
I got you. It didn't die yet,
right.
So... The great thing is that I think what we're going to have to do is we have to definitely continue this conversation, because what I definitely want you to do is I want you to hear the message of the gentleman on the YouTube video that I'm talking about.
Okay.
And I definitely want you to sort of contribute to that conversation, because a lot of stuff that he was sharing, in my opinion, was exactly what we need to address. And he talked about, you know, the economic development of a community and how it actually separates different individuals. You know, people respect you based on your economic level. And so I think once you hear that information, we can come back and discuss that, because so many people are looking at different avenues for which they address the concerns of the black community.
Yeah.
But so many times people really don't know where to start. And we start in areas which really don't start the true development of a community, and where people find value in developing their community. So.
Okay. All right. How much more time do we have on this program?
We have about 5 minutes. But you know, I want to hear that piece, and then hopefully, if I don't, my phone doesn't die, Jill's gonna take it home for me, because she's a trooper like that.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure which piece that was. Oh, this is a piece. Sheila might like this. I'll end with this one, Sheila. Yeah, Rory, I shared several pieces of it, Rory. And one of the pieces I shared with him that I wrote some. Hello?
Yep, I'm ready.
Yeah. It's called Finding Me. And so this goes into the issue in terms of relationships. And so I wrote this on the basis of somebody I had met many years ago within the context of community work. And I finished it some time ago based upon the relationships that I hear between men and women all the time. So some of me in here, I wrote it, but it's some of me in here relationships. It's some other folks' relationships, some relationships that Rory have had over the years, maybe you've touched on, but it talks about those things. And it talks about, I think, from a conscious perspective in terms of looking at the issue of consciousness that's kind of woven into here. So I need to set that tone. So it's called Finding Me. And Rory, I kind of liked this piece because we had to laugh about it. I met her between the intersection of falsehood and hope, where political action masquerades as potential consciousness. I had seen her one or maybe 2 days earlier, where direct action produced no sustainable results, but the people needed to be there to serve. So we were. Our formal meeting occurred on a night or so later. She approached me. The introduction was quite plausible. An exchange of pleasantries occurred, only to be overshadowed by my embrace of her naked hand. She informed me later that it was somewhat lengthy. Probably so, because I was captivated by the tone of her voice, by the gentleness of her smile, by her somewhat shy approach, by the glitter of her brown eyes, by her decisiveness, by her radiance, by the natural crown of glory she wore, by her face that caused me to simply say, wow. Yeah, there was a softness supported by an upright, stern projection of confidence and intellect. Yeah, I was indeed captivated. Not by traditional definition of fine, for I had yet to gauge body structure with her being coated up, but later I assessed that she was. I was captivated by her desire to be involved, but not knowing exactly what it meant to engage. This was a world that I knew upon meeting her was new to her. And I, at the time, knew that we were not of the same awareness and consciousness to this work and world. She was an amateur, someone who got caught up in mimicking a long time ago like others, but projecting sincerity about knowing more, or so I thought. I would discover later that she was indeed smart but lacked depth of knowledge, that her seriousness of purpose and definition of success was defined by ostentatious materialism, that relationships with her were superficial and loosely defined and thus never produced the type of intensity that leads to growth that she needed beyond physical fulfillment, that she would remain stagnated, constantly tapping on the door of spirituality, an open invitation extended to come in, but she would reject it like she had before because she was not courageous enough to embrace truth, that she would always retreat back to the familiar place that sheltered her, provided her comfort, and allowed her to mask her pain. Yet, I certainly did not want to admit it, but she knocked my socks off. So I took a pause to embrace her more fully, more deeply, more completely. She did not fit the traditional profile of past pursuits, someone of similar engagement in community. And thus I knew that our interaction would be intense because she was not baptized in community. Her thinking was not boundary free or comprehensive or global. Yet I took a pause, not so much because of desire, but because I was captivated. She knocked my socks off. I needed to know what it meant. Why me? Why now? Why her? Not the traditional profile. For if the profile were traditional, it would be easy to accept, to understand, to embrace this new feeling of love at first meeting. Not because it happened so quickly, but because the feeling was new. It was surreal. So the pause was required by me for me to learn. As I became more aware of who she was through, yes, those predicted intense interactions, the answers to my proposed internal inquisitions of why materialized. I needed to get to know me better, to accept me for me, to love me for my unique differences, to be grateful for the traditional while embracing the non-traditional, to appreciate my gifts, to never give in to less because others do not understand the greater, to never apologize for the love I freely give, but certainly apologize for not demonstrating it with patience, to always be me. I needed to know that love was not linear, but rather multifaceted, confusing, and surprising. I needed to understand that it required no reciprocation. She was not the traditional pursuit. So I took that pause to gain insight. I am glad I did. I am thankful to the universal distinction of her. She became my guide, my inspiration, my rescuer, my love interest without ever intimately loving her in the traditional way. She taught me how to befriend me, to love me with no reservations and no regrets, a lesson that the traditional pursuit could never teach. Yes, she captivated me, knocked my socks off, and somewhere along the way, I very quickly experienced this new feeling of love as first meeting. In love at a spiritual level with her, not easily understood. I realized that she was indeed special due to potential not yet realized if only she stepped outside of her zone of comfort. And sad to know that I could not assist her organically as she did me because she never understood that organic would not work for her, that she needed structure to understand the why. I am glad that I accepted the universal truth and gift of her at that moment, exercised patience that usually escaped me, and stopped in my tracks and paused, not knowing that at journey's end, I would find me. Did we lose Rory?
No, Rory ain't no, Rory's in the game. Rory's on the, Rory's threes in this game. Please understand.
Did you, all I got to know is, if it's true, did you marry her? That sounds like a deep wedding vow.
No, there was no intimacy there, sister. There was no intimacy at all. That was a, like I said, it was a combination of different folks and different experiences by different men. And actually, you could reverse that and say women.
Right.
So it was written from that perspective when I write. And it's,
beautiful.
And so it's a blending for people to think about relationships.
Oh, man. That was beautiful. So I was trying to ping my friend Rory on his phone, but he was ignoring me. But it's
no, you can't ping me on my phone. My phone has probably like one bar left on power and signal. So I'm just trying.
Well,
to,
I'm not sure
I'm
if this conversation
the
went the way in which you want necessarily to go, Rory and Sheila. I had told Rory that I would come on Sheila and set the tone by some of my writings, as opposed to get into
love
the
it.
Heavier stuff that he and I talk about all the time, which is the truth around how we deal with communities. And maybe another time we can get into deeper conversations after I look at the video in terms of exactly about that, especially on the issue of economic development. I'm not necessarily sure, Rory, that I will end up agreeing with somebody on that issue because I'm not sure that that's what communities need. We live in a society that is extremely wealthy, and we need to figure out in this society in terms of how you share that wealth and broaden it. The concept and the belief of what constitutes a community and not be restricted along the lines of race and along the lines of perimeters and those particular type of things, which are all artificial. And I think we, as an African-based people, have to set the tone for that. And we've not done a very good job in setting that tone. It is always interesting. So let me share this one thing with you and remind all of those, especially since we come, many of us come out of a Christian-based community. But I think this applies, and somewhere, you know, it was written in John and in the book of John where it says, "Do not love the world, nor the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him, because everything that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pretentious pride of physical life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world and its lust is passing away, but the one who does the will of God abides forever." So I think our responsibility as an African-based people is to pick that up and resurrect that in a very meaningful way and understand what our responsibilities are. And so that's another conversation for another time.
Amen. That's all I can say. Where can they find you? Do you have a website, a Twitter, Instagram?
No, sister, I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. You can find me by getting my personal number from Rory.
All right now. Okay. Well, we will keep an eye on our Facebook page and make sure if anyone's trying to reach you, we send them your way.
All right. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, Rory. All right. So
Jerry, I'll be in touch with you tomorrow. I'm going to send you that link when I get home this evening so you can look at it, and then we'll dialogue about it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And we'll set it up for us to continue this conversation, because what I want to do is I definitely want to dig a little deeper into how we actually move our agenda as a people forward.
Okay. Much love. Thank you.
All right. Definitely. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for coming on. All right, Sheila, I'm about to the power off, but I'm going to give you the lead on this. Keep talking until my phone dies.
Well, that was, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You can tell a smart brother. That's one smart man, and you can tell.
You didn't even tap the tip of the iceberg on his intellect. Because he shared his writings. I mean, I think what we have to do is, if we're going to do something in reference to some of the stuff that he talked about as far as the economic development of the African-American community and some of the solutions that we need to talk about, he's definitely one of those individuals. You know, like when we speak to, you know, Dr. Carlos, when we speak to Dr. Jenkins, when we speak to all of the individuals, a lot of the individuals who we had on our show, even the younger brothers and sisters who have shared just information of transformation from our community on our show, we need to compile just months of sharing information from them. We need to set up a strategy that's going to work, that actually grows our communities to the next level. So, I mean, we're going to talk about that, because we're going to make these next few months very, very powerful months. So I appreciate
love
you for sharing the show tonight.
Well, it was an awesome show. We've got to tell people where to find you.
You know where to find me, Rory T. Edwards. Google everything. Rory T. Edwards. Google me.
You're going to find me following Rory T. Edwards and Rory T. Edwards' Facebook page and StriveUSA at AOL.com for email. You can also find me on Facebook as Sheila Robinson. But one thing is for sure, if you can't find us there, you can always write it.
In the sky. Peace and blessings, family. Thank you for listening.
River of our flowing love, now has dried. No amount of tears could ever revive it. No matter how we tried it. have known, although you cannot show.